This is Roots Pod, an audio production of Roots Blog and member of the Rootscast Broadcast Network.
Launch it, he dives, top of the six, almost fell for Moran. Hackshaw, off the post, and in! Nabil Hackshaw, wow, what a moment! We're level!
Welcome in, this is Aaron with John and Peter once again, and we're gonna dwell on the Roots' recent 2-2 draw with Monterey Bay Union FC. Maybe talk a little bit about what it means for the playoffs. Probably talk a lot of it about what it means for the playoffs, if we're being honest. But we'll start by recapping the game and then look ahead. So 2-2, it was so frustrating. The Union, Monterey Bay, they got the scoring. They opened the scoring in the third minute. Alex Dixon on a, I really think this is a mistake, and we'll come back to it. I think Emery just switched off for half a second and allowed a runner in behind. But that was the only goal until the very end of the first half, when Danny Barbier, of all people, got one in the 44th minute for Oakland. And then in the 64th minute, Monterey Bay took the lead again. Sean Okoli, and again, I think it comes down to a little bit of a defensive lapse, was able to get one over on Nabil Hackshaw and then squeeze it past Paul Blanchett. But in the dying minutes, officially in the 90th minute, Nabil Hackshaw went and totally redeemed himself with a goal that has showed up on, I think, on the USL Championship Twitters as a candidate for goal of the week. It was a real feat of athleticism, such a feat of athleticism, John, that you described it in the moment as falling over. You know, it got the job done. It was very exciting. And, you know, one point is better than no points, especially when it means that Monterey takes one instead of three. But you can't help but feel like that was a little bit of a missed opportunity, right? I mean, Roots were all over Monterey Bay from the jump. I thought there were actually some adjustments in this match. I think the Roots had a lot more positional flexibility. Trayvon Reed started in this game, and ostensibly he was the left wing. You saw him pop up on the right all the time. Danny Barbier played 10 of the 11 positions on the pitch at one point during the match. You know, there was a lot of that kind of movement within the system that the Roots run. It just sort of all came to naught, I think, because, and this might be related, at least on the offensive end, on the attacking side of things, because there was a just general allergy to taking shots or making far post runs. I mean, it was unbelievable the number of times when you're looking at it, it's going, just uncork a shot. Please, for the love of God, someone put the ball on net. You know, let's test this keeper. He's not Paul Blanchett. You know, he's not one of the two or three best keepers in the league. Let's see what happens here. And the far post runs too. I mean, they were open all match long, I thought. And the only person who decided to make one was Danny Barbier. Of course it was. I mean, the guy was doing everything, and he makes a far post run at the end of the first half. And, oh, look at that. There's a goal. But I think a lot of the Roots' sort of frustrating offensive tendencies reared their ugly head again here. I mean, they seemed more concerned with maintaining possession than scoring a goal for long stretches of the game. And it's especially frustrating because they were, like I said, they're all over Monterey Bay. They had for the Roots at least, a relatively high press, and Monterey basically couldn't cope with it. Now, you know, they switched off briefly twice, and it hurt them. I think on the first goal, both goals, actually, I'll say this, both goals started with long passes out from the back that were not pressured. And when you're playing a higher line, you can't let that happen, right? I mean, that is just the last thing you want to be doing because, you know, when your back line is up, there's going to be space to run in behind. And that's kind of what happened here. On the first one, I think Emre just kind of didn't recognize it and didn't step up. Both of the other two defenders stepped up. Emre was a step behind, and that's the reason why that initial pass, and I forget who it was to. It wasn't Okoli. Okoli got the second ball there. But it's the reason why that initial pass was onside. You know, the Monterey Bay player was able to sit behind Hackshaw and And then Emre came over to try to clean it up and left half the field open. And I understand what he was doing, but I think, you know, third minute of the game, I get it. You're not totally engaged, but I think that's really what's happening there. And then the Okoli goal in the second half, sorry, I think I just attributed the first one to Okoli. Obviously it wasn't, it was Alex Dixon.
The first was Alex Dixon, and it was assisted by Sam Gliedel. He's the one who Gliedel beat the offside trap.
Beat the offside trap. Because it was poorly laid. Yeah.
Yeah.
On the second one, I mean, again, you're not pressing the guy with the ball. It bit the roots in the ass, but is the one time all game when it didn't look like Neville Hackshaw was defending Okoli physically. And, you know, it still took a really nice touch from Okoli to control it and get it into a space where he could shoot it. But it was just sort of baffling watching from the stands. Like, what is this? Is not it looked a little bit like Hackshaw was worried about, you know, the sort of the last man foul or something. I don't know.
I think he loses his footing. You know, he tries to bump him like butt to butt, but he's coming down to the ground. And like, I think that he just doesn't get his footing quite right. So he gets knocked over or knocked more off balance, and Okoli can just run, you know, and then Hackshaw's playing catch up, and he should have eaten that foul. I don't know. Maybe it would have been, it might've been a red card.
If he'd gotten him early enough, I don't think it's a red. After Okoli got the ball. Yes, you're right. It's a red.
Yeah.
Which wouldn't have been to the Roots' advantage, but honestly, though, they might have been able to continue putting the pressure on Monterey Bay with just 10 guys. They're clearly a step above Monterey in terms of quality, and it's incredibly frustrating it didn't translate on the pitch.
Just to touch on those mistakes there, I mean, that was in my takeaways, was mistakes plague the team again. Against Tulsa, it was the back line checking off on a ball over the top to Philip Goodrum. And then this time, even on that third minute goal, you could see the screenshot I took. There's a ball over the top to Okoli, and I think this is where you're catching him up in that first goal there, because Okoli was such a big part of that goal. This goal doesn't happen without him. It's a ball over the top to him, and both Barbier and Hackshaw are pressing Okoli, not really pressing him. There's like 2 feet of space between them, and it's just an easy flick on to Gliedel, and then in no man's land is Emre, so he's caught between two spaces. Where does he go? Who does he cover? And then, you know, Alex Dixon puts it away. So and then really it came through, you know, unfortunate on that second goal. Like Peter called there, he stumbled, he let the ball bounce, and then as it bounced, he took a stumble, and that was enough for Okoli to run around him and get the shot off. But then there was another moment where Okoli missed a perfect opportunity to feed Alex Dixon. I think it was in the 56th minute, and there's a ball over the top, and it's 2-on-1, and Okoli, instead of feeding Alex Dixon to the left, takes a long shot and it goes to the right of net. And I'm thinking, thank God, because that's a goal right there. So it's just these little mistakes that are just been plaguing them. And it's, you know, one or two mistakes in a game, it's like mistakes happen. It's going to happen. It's just when they're destructive like that, you know, that's what, you know, you can't really have, and you see how it changes a game. I mean, Tulsa, you played a pretty clean game, and that one mistake on a ball over the top is what made the difference. And, you know, now you're getting down to the playoffs. You gotta play sharp. You gotta be up to it.
So that's a good corrective on the first goal, that I put a lot of the blame there on Emre, but you're right. There's definitely a miscommunication about who was supposed to have the first guy. Right, between Hackshaw and Barbier. And it's that miscommunication. I think they're both stepping up. First of all, I think they're both stepping up because the Roots were trying to play the offside trap most of the game. But one of them, it shouldn't be two guys who are both kind of half going after the ball. I mean, that's a miscommunication. And then Emre not stepping up means that mistake gets maximally punished. And, you know, it is sort of unfortunate that the Roots are playing fine most of the game, pretty good even. But they have these lapses at the worst possible time, and their opponents have been taking advantage of it. And that's, on the one hand, you figure like that's luck that could turn around. On the other hand, we're talking about the same kind of pattern of play that these mistakes are coming on, these long balls over the top. I mean, that's when you can't be making mistakes. And the other thing is, we wouldn't be worried as much about it if they were putting the ball in the back of the net more. You know, I don't expect perfection from the defense, but, you know, if you're not going to get a whole lot of help from the attack, maybe we do need to expect perfection. I don't know. Peter, what were you about to say?
Well, I wonder, thinking about that Akoli goal in the third minute and how much that derailed the game, because then the Roots are chasing. Sorry, I'm doing the same thing. It wasn't the Akoli goal. I'm talking about the
He's just such an integral Dixon part goal. Of the Monterey Bay attack. We assume he was responsible for all of the goals.
And the most fun name to say. That's Sam right. Gleedle is an awful tinny name. but as much as like we want to criticize the Roots about this, because the Roots are letting this slip away, you know, maybe you have to give some credit here to Monterey and to Frank Yallop, right? For game planning, that, you know, the problem with playing three center backs is sometimes it's confusing who's marking whom. And maybe that was like totally dialed up or part of the plan to begin with, is no one's going to know exactly who's supposed to deal with Gleedle there. And so they both do. And Dixon sees that and is like, I'm going to run and hope that Gleedle wins this ball. And if he doesn't, nothing comes of it. We're like, this nerd ran 20 yards for no reason and then jogged back. But like the, you know, Gleedle did win it, and Dixon then was like absolutely able to blow past Emra. So if the Roots did that, we would be calling it good game planning.
I mean, that's fair. Not a huge fan of giving Monterey credit, but you make an excellent point. And maybe it's something we need to look for, you know, in these last four games, if that's how teams are attacking the Roots and what Roots do to counter it.
I mean, I think it's important to point out to some of Noah's words after the game regarding players who could be coming back, players who could affect how the system works out, because, you know, I see some of these mistakes and, you know, Hackshaw's great, but a lot of it falls on him. And I think some of that can tie to this indecision or somewhat of this, you know, like, oh, we want to get him in the midfield, we like him in the midfield, but oh, he's also he has to play center back right now. And you can kind of get crossed up, and I think you want to get Hackshaw in a place where he can focus all of his time, all of his effort. And, you know, if midfield is the spot where he is, which I think he is, then it's important to get him there. And with that, it's some of Noah's words that, you know, they're looking at Nane to come back. And you see at the end of his quote, he says, JoJo's experience is key. And I think that spells to getting JoJo back at center back, getting Hackshaw back up to midfield. Because that was my question exactly, was, are you eager to get Hackshaw back into the midfield? And it was essentially, yes, I am. So I definitely think that is going to be a big part going forward. It's just a matter if JoJo is ready. And it sounds like he's getting there. Sounds like he's really close. So I think we could expect JoJo here in the next game or game after that.
So what you're saying is that we're probably looking at Hackshaw in the midfield and Nane in the back line.
Exactly. I mean, that's what it was.
Like it was before the injury.
Yeah.
Well, as much as we want to talk about how frustrating these defensive lapses were, we should probably acknowledge the defense is still overall pretty good, and that it's the offense, the attack, where I think we have the longest term frustrations. You know, I don't know. You know, Pelaez, we said after the previous match, like, he's looking the part. Maybe we give him a little more run out. And John, you said, I want to see him and Rodriguez on the pitch at the same time. Well, we saw it, and it wasn't great. Pelaez didn't have the same kind of performance, I thought. You know, he didn't, he wasn't as energetic. He wasn't picking the ball up in the same spots. I very much appreciated the effort that Johnny and Trayvon Reed put into sort of switching sides and trying to confuse the defense. I don't really know how effective it was, possibly because it's the first match that those two have played together in those positions and tried to do that. I mean, that's, you know, to a point you just made about the communication along the back line, there's been a lot of chopping and changing for, you know, reasons of suspensions and injuries and whatnot recently. And maybe this is something that the Roots can kind of grow into as they head to the playoffs. I don't know. They just, like I said, when I was recapping the game, it always looks, always is a strong word. It often looks like the Roots are more interested in maintaining possession and waiting for the absolute perfect shot than they are in trying to just, you know, cause chaos in the box and, you know, putting something on net, trying something, you know, and it spells long periods in this match, at least long periods when the Roots were on top, but never really looked threatening because it looked like they just wanted to walk the ball into the goal. And that wasn't going to happen. You know, none of them are Thierry Henry. That's just the unfortunate nature of things.
I'd bite your hand off for Thierry Henry right now.
Maybe that's what we use the community investment money for.
Bring Thierry Henry out of retirement. I mean, I'm not
sure. Surely we can give him a contract that rivals what he's getting for Paramount Plus. Surely.
Exactly. Has to. And isn't he an assistant coach somewhere now too? I mean, hey.
He won't move without Kate Abdo, and she's the one we can't afford.
That's true. How do we get Kate Abdo into the ownership group? Anyways.
We bring the whole crew, right? The other two are defenders. Maybe that would be, they could, I don't think that either Micah Richards or Jamie Carragher have much lateral quickness right now, but maybe they can.
They fit right in.
They can play the center back role. They can, all right. Roots sign Micah Richards and Jamie Carragher and Thierry Henry. We're getting sidetracked. I kind of like how Plies looked. I mean, I don't know. I feel like I'm very alone on that subject. I don't know. Everything on has told you it's not working, but I can see how Plies can change the game with his speed, his physicality, his, you know, shooting on a whim from distance. Hope to see that again. You know, maybe aerially, he's not the most clinical or at all clinical, but I can see the benefits there. Noah also said during the interview, I asked, can we see him again? He said, yes, I think his physicality against San Antonio will be key. Maybe that's a clue. Maybe he is planning. Maybe, you know, maybe there's still some to be determined there. But I don't know. I still would like to see more of Pelaez. I think he has something to offer.
What I feel like tells a story about this game is that the Roots, apparently per FP Ref, had 17 shots. I don't recall most of those. And Pelaez and starting left-sided forward Trayvon Reed combined for 3, which is the same number as Neville Hackshaw. 17 shots and 4 on target. The two that went in, one from Diaz and one from Cedeno. So no forward got a shot on target.
Yeah. See what you're saying now.
Yeah. It feels like something that needs to change. But now let's talk about something that was good. I thought Babacar and I looked pretty good out there. And I really enjoyed his decision in the 90th minute to wave off Danny Barbier and said, no, we're not taking the easy throw in. I'm going to throw this all the way into the box because that's how the equalizer came. Yeah, I don't think he technically gets an assist because someone else got a touch on that. But spiritually, he got an assist there. He didn't necessarily blow anybody away, but I thought he popped. He looked good. I'm interested to see how they deploy him. I don't see him... I guess the issue is I don't see him displacing Memo right now, but I also don't think that I think he if he continues to perform at the level he performed at in this match, he's too good to be on the bench. You know, I don't know what you do there.
He didn't come in as a fullback or wingback, did he? He came in on as a central midfielder.
That's a great question. Yeah, it's true. He did. He came on for Napo.
I mean, we were chasing, so at that point, we're just putting on people who run fast.
Yeah. But Napo was on a yellow.
Yeah. So you know, I think that there may be some tactical flexibility because we have Tamakis and Diaz and Babacar who all sort of the first two are too good to bench at any point. And if if Babacar's in the same boat, one of them has to do something else. Play as a forward, play as a center back, or play as a midfielder. I thought he looked good as well. I mean, I think at that point, you know, the Roots were getting some things going, just they only got the one thing going and only at the very end.
It's an interesting conundrum for people who are paid by this team and not us. There's a lot of guys who play kind of similar positions who you want on the pitch. There's just a question of which of the attackers are you using in any given game. And those are two completely different questions because, you know, we have all of these wingbacks, fullbacks, wide midfielders who look like they need to be on the pitch. And then we're sitting here going, which combination of forwards is going to get us, you know, two shots on target in this game? That last question, they got to find an answer to, though. I mean, you know, no, it doesn't matter who they play at the back if we can't find someone up front to provide some goals.
Yeah, you know, Saldana coming in at the last moments there, I thought was an interesting move. His second appearance, and you know, I don't think he totally looked terrible. He's a lot bigger than I expected. Like he kind of stood next to Pelaez on the field there, and I was like, oh my god, he's only like a couple inches shorter than him. But I mean, it's the pipeline of talent. It kind of speaks to how no veteran depth was signed at the position. But I mean, if you can pull on this kid, trust him, like Delgado seemingly does with all of his players. I mean, that's one thing you can say about him is he trusts everybody on that 18-man roster. And then great. It's going to be important. Maybe we'll see more of Saldana next season. I mean, that seems like a sure thing. He'll be among those guys. But yeah, they got to find something. I mean, you could bring up the goals for now. Where are Roots? 8th, 9th, I think, in the West.
This attack that looked so brilliant early in the season is currently yielded the fewest goals of any team in a playoff position in the West.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I think there's something we have to talk about. I mean, you hear it after every game, you go to the parking lot, and I think it's the first thing everybody always says to me. It's, you know, this wouldn't be happening if we had Rito, or, you know, I'm like, everybody's like, oh, you know, Rito, Rito, Rito. And I'm always like, well, guys, I still think we got the better end of that deal. But what is your guys' thoughts, your takeaways just from those thoughts?
I mean, I agree with you. Cedeno has slotted in perfectly. They've got a formula with him involved that works. Whatever combination of players we have out there right now is probably performing as well as whatever combination we would have been able to put out if they'd held on to Rito. Totally unknowable. Not really worth interrogating either, honestly. Like, it happened. We can't go back.
I think we'd be better with Rito than not with Rito, but I don't know that I buy that we'd be better with Rito than Cedeno. And I still think that I believe in the Cedeno project. which obviously Noah does because they signed him up for a long time. So I still think it was probably a good move. There, you know, there's times that you wish you had him, but I also think that when we see big open, you know, all of this open space, and it's like, man, if Rito were here, like late in the game, there's all this open space, and it's like, man, if Rito were here, there's no way they could stop him. He'd just run there and you hoof the ball over the top. But when we had Rito, they just didn't leave that space open. They defended differently. And all of those times that Rito got played all the way into the corner and would cross the ball directly out over the byline, you know, like, he's a really good player. He was the best player on our team last season, but he wasn't.
Yeah, no, his crossing had a real, maybe the real crosses were the friends we made along the way kind of vibe to them.
And I still, you know, I mean, so he would be a forward, I guess. I mean, that's where Noah was playing him. And I still think that there were problems with his forward play. You know, he really excelled as a wing back under Guerra. But how much of that involved having Jose Hernandez and Otar Carlson, a slightly better attacking central midfielder than we currently have in Jose, and a hold up central striker in Carlson? You know, those are like the things you want when you have a guy that's the fastest guy on the field. We don't really have those right now. And I don't know that it means that Rito was going to be getting into all that kind of space. He largely wasn't in the first part of the season. So tell that to the people in the parking lot, John.
It's probably also worth noting that since moving to Hartford, Rito has 2 assists and no goals. And Hartford, I don't remember exactly when this trade happened, but Hartford is in a bad way. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 2 wins and 14 losses in their last 16 matches. So, I mean, as bad as things have been, one, it could have been worse. And two, the team that currently has Rito is not doing that well. So, I don't know. I agree. Find something else to talk, a different thing to complain about in the parking lot, people.
His last game for the Roots was May 27th against Loyal. And then he didn't play anywhere for 2 weeks. And his next game was at Hartford.
Was it the Detroit City game?
Hartford draw against Indy 11 on June 10th.
Okay, so that was the match immediately before the 2-14 or 2-0-14 stretch that Hartford is currently on. So the man has been in Hartford for 17 matches and gotten 7 points. The nice thing about this result, like I said, is that Monterey doesn't walk away with 3 points. And in fact, Monterey's probably kicking themselves because they were ahead going into the 90th minute against both San Diego and Oakland last week and walked away from those matches with a grand total of 1 point. Had they taken all 6, they actually wouldn't move up the table very far, but they'd be in a much more comfortable position than they currently are, which is 8th, tied with Oakland, but behind them on goal differential. And having played 1 game more than both Oakland and El Paso, who is right behind them, and Rio Grande Valley, who is right behind El Paso. So it could be worse. We could be in a worse spot. Well, we've been talking about how it feels like the Roots' very strong playoff position has been slipping away from them. They are still in a better spot than Monterey Bay. You know, I can offer that bit of perspective right now. But that's about as good as I can do.
Yeah, I mean, that's about the story. It's tight, and the Roots probably have the hardest remaining strength of schedule of the teams they're immediately competing with, except that Monterey only has 3 games left. And that is currently the big gift to the Roots, is that, you know, they have a game in hand.
Yeah, and it's not particularly 3 easy matches either. They got San Diego, Birmingham,
Orange County. Yeah,
Yeah, that's pretty brutal. It really looks like it's going to come down to the end for Roots. I mean, they have, this is also brutal, San Antonio, San Diego, Orange County. You know, I'm not counting them out against the two middle ones there, San Diego and Orange County. And then you finish the season with El Paso. So it's really going to come right down.
You can't count them out against those teams. I mean, my gosh, they've got to get points from those games, it looks like. Yeah.
You have to now. I mean, you backed them off into a corner. I mean, how the three matches here we circled as 9 points. Well, got one of them. How critical would those 8 points would have been? You guys said it earlier. They would have been what, up to third?
Be in third place right now.
Yep. Challenging.
Well,
yep.
Colorado's remaining schedule is easy. They have Detroit, RGV, Lights, and Phoenix. El Paso has Charleston, Loyal, Memphis, and Roots. So they have four remaining playoff games, or they have four remaining games against teams currently in the playoffs. So, you know, El Paso gets Charleston and Memphis both at home, and that means that they're flying across country and has all the advantages that come with that. But, like, it is a close call whether you would trade the Roots schedule for El Paso's schedule to finish the season, and the Roots are currently above them. They need to pick up points on the Roots, or point on the Roots.
Point. Right. Yeah, and to that last point, no pun intended. One of the things that had been giving us some comfort up until this past week is that the table is still pretty congested, right? It's San Antonio and Sacramento and then everyone else, and then Las Vegas below that. And this is bad because it means anyone can move up, but that also means you have an opportunity for Oakland, you know, with a couple of wins to move up. Well, obviously the wins haven't happened. But what has happened is that other teams have won. And now you have still have Sacramento and San Antonio way out in front. But now you have four teams behind them who've kind of separated themselves from the rest of the pack in San Diego, Phoenix, Orange County, and Colorado Springs, who are on 47, 47, 47, and 46 points, respectively. And then it's another jump down to the next group of five, of which two will make the playoffs. Currently, Oakland and Monterey Bay hold those spots, but I mean, El Paso and Rio Grande Valley have got to be looking at this going, we still have a chance.
Yeah. RGV has Hartford and Loudoun on their schedule. Sorry, this is going to be an awful noise in the background. They have Hartford and Loudoun on their schedule, which you could pencil in for 6 points.
Which is really frustrating because that's exactly what they would need to jump right back into the conversation. It's good that Monterey's schedule is going to be difficult. You know, I think they have to be kicking themselves. They'd be, if they got the 6 points these last 2 weeks, they'd be in a great spot, even with this schedule, but they're in a tough way. I feel like it is going to be two of Oakland, El Paso, and Rio Grande Valley. So it's a good thing we get to play one of them. You know, that's another chance to, that's a 6-pointer. That's really, really important. Well, before we get to all of those games to end the season there, oh my God, we got to play San Antonio. So much has happened since the last time we played San Antonio.
San Antonio had a 6-game stretch where they got 5 draws and a loss, including.
Yeah, and they just smoked Orange County last weekend.
Yeah, but Orange County are bad, right? They're still like the second worst team in the table.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is not like, I'm glad it's in Oakland, but, you know, San Antonio are good.
Oakland hung with them last time. If it weren't for those two really fluky goals, as a completely different way to start the season. And I mean, we said that at the time. That was a much better performance than the scoreline indicated, and it wasn't long until Oakland were off and running. They're going to need another performance like that. That's just the long and short of it.
Only one team has successfully overrun the Roots this season. Even when they've lost by multiple goals, it's always things slipped away or they made a couple of mental errors or something. So, you know, I do still kind of feel like they can hang with anyone. And we know that they've done it with San Antonio. It was just a bad result at the end.
Yeah. They're also fighting their own home form, which is inexplicable. 18 points earned in 15 home matches. I can't explain that at all.
Our home field, terrible quality. I don't know.
But it's terrible for both teams.
Yeah, I know. It's terrible. It's,
I don't even know if it's terrible.
Our quality. Yeah, the field quality. I think that is what players hate sometimes when there's, I don't know, when there's collective hatred towards something, there's like negative mojo towards it. And I think that's been the case for Pioneer Stadium. It's a hard surface. You fall on it. You feel it. You walk on it. You know, you stand on it all game. You know, your feet feel it. It's an unforgiving surface. And I remember when I asked Noah about what can he say about the home field, you know, inconsistency. And he says, I don't know, I'm sure there's some things. And I could tell when he says there's some things, he's looking out towards the field glaring. And I'm like, that means the field. He hates the field. The players hate the field. But it is what it is.
Maybe it is in their heads. Maybe that's what it is. They're just in their own heads about this stuff. It's a mental block. They can't get past it. They're going to need to get past it, right? They got San Antonio and El Paso at home to close out the season.
And also, you're going to play there next year too. So you got to learn to love it.
Interesting.
You got to learn to love it. It's the situation you're in. You got to make the most of it. So start making the fucking most of it.
Yeah. Well, like Peter said, San Antonio's really freaking good. There's just no other way to put it. They have goals coming from a lot of different places. Tani Oluwaseyi, Rita Zou here, Ignacio Bailone. They're good. Jorge Hernandez has 10 assists on the season. You probably remember Lamar Batista, Mitch Tainer. I mean, this team is, they've got a lot of talent. You know, when we had Harry from the San Antonio FC podcast on last season, he described them as borderline MLS, and that hasn't changed.
Yeah, I don't think he realized how funny Mitch Tainer's name is either. I remember that question.
I'm sure that if you're a fan of this team, you have to kind of suppress that. It would be very difficult, I think, to regularly cheer for a guy named Mitch Tainer without some sort of mental gymnastics happening.
Mitch the Taint Tainer.
We as a fan base would obviously have hilarious chance about it, but I just don't know if other fan bases quite have our brand of degeneracy, you know.
hold on, it would be paint no rest for the wicked, right?
That's a good one. I don't know what the second line would be in that chant though.
I got nothing. I'm a
okay.
I have no idea.
Peter's taking called. Peter's taking work calls during the podcast.
Oh, what the hell? My watch heard me say that and then started playing it on my phone.
That's pretty much creepy.
The AI is subverting our podcast because it knows that we're on the way up.
Technology is too much, man. That makes me sound like I'm 80 years old, but it's just too much sometimes. All right, John. All right, let's bring it back. Who's gonna give us the standout performance for the Roots this week that gets them over the hump against San Antonio?
Ooh. What I really want to say, and this would be, I would say, the low percentage guess, because a lot has to go right before then, is Joseph Nane allowing Neville Hackshaw to go back in the midfield. I'm going to hope that. If not, I'm going to say that striker role, which hopefully is Pelaez. I mean, we'll see what Noah's words, what he means by that, how he plans to utilize his physicality, whether that means a start, whether that means coming in the, you know, 60, 70th minute or later. But yeah, I'm going to say Pelias too, just based off what Noah said. You know, I'm going to take him at his word and let's see what it means.
All right. So Pelias with a big performance to get Oakland over the hump. Peter, who do you see as the standout player this time around?
It's Tomakis this time. You know,
fairly safe.
Yeah. I mean, he plays well all the time, but I don't know.
I mean, well, speaking of people who play well all the time, I think a lot of these guys are very good, but I think at this point in the season, there are like four or five guys who I want them to be able to do whatever the hell they want on the pitch. Barbier, Tomakis, Hackshaw, Cedeno, you guys decide what it is you're going to do. Everyone else kind of play off that. After watching Barbier's very skillful far post run score that opener, I want to see the guy wherever he wants to be, wherever he thinks his best spot is at any given time. Anyway, that's a tangent. You said Tomakis. I think that's a good choice.
I think that's a good choice too. I mean, we never really talked about just how pinpoint precise that pass was in, and I'm calling it a pass. They called it a shot on the broadcast, and I think he saw Barbier making the run there and just rifled in a perfect low driven pass, just as perfect as it could be. And
that was beautiful. Thank God
Barbier handled it. I mean, handled it perfectly.
Absolutely, beautiful. Yeah. I think the standout performer is going to have to be Cedeno. Somebody's going to have to break up that San Antonio back line. I'm gonna predict that it'll be him. Fingers crossed. Maybe it's Barbier. I'm loving what I'm seeing out of Barbier with a more attacking mindset. But I think it's going to be. This is a game where Oakland is going to need to be dribbling through some opposing players, and that sounds like it's got Yesiel Cedeno written all over it. I won't ask you guys about the score. We'll put them on the blog. We all know Oakland's winning. Only question is by how much. You have until the weekend to figure it out. All right. Well, it's another home match. So another chance for us to get together at Pioneer Field, enjoy the views, enjoy not running on the turf, apparently. Enjoy the leg workout we get getting beers and tacos. Only have so many of them left, so we got to savor them. And hopefully we'll be able to share that experience this weekend. And as always, until then, up the roots.